Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Adventure on W4CY Radio.
Wake up, America! It's time for the Adventures of Hype Man on W4CY.com, West Palm Beach's number one internet radio station. Here's your host, the Hype Man.
This is the Pipe Man here on the Adventures of Pipe Man W4CY Radio, and I'm very excited about our next guest. He's actually, he should be from the Chicago Blackhawks, but he's not. But I think
hey, Pipe Man, nice to talk to you, man. And you're right. I have to be honest with you and tell you it was a lifelong dream of mine and probably every other Canadian kid out there to be in the NHL, but I didn't want to be on the Toronto Maple Leafs. I want to be on the Chicago Blackhawks, for sure.
Well, there you go. So everybody knows who you really are. This is Andy Curran from Coney Hatch. So I think that's even better because I'm a Devils fan. So, you know.
Well, we could talk a little bit about the Devils and the Blackhawks because I was sad for the Devils fans this year when they traded for Corey Crawford, the longtime Blackhawk goalie, and then Corey ended up retiring. So it was like you guys had an awesome goalie, and then whatever happened at the 11th hour, you didn't. But yeah, hockey and rock and roll are two big passions of mine, Pipe Man.
Same with me. I used to coach for my son roller hockey and ice hockey, and I had second row blue line for the Devils for years, and I also had do you remember the roller hockey league down here? I even had tickets for that too.
Oh wow, that's awesome. And you know, the underlying theme, and I jokingly tell people, you know, because I started playing hockey when I was 5 years old, and I played all the way up into high school, into my late teens, and everybody around me started getting a lot bigger. And I was, you know, I've always been a skinny, you know, 150 pounds wet out of the shower, and I was getting crushed out there. And I thought, okay, I am not going to make it to the show. I'm not going to make the NHL. Maybe rock and roll is a safer avenue for me. So the last couple years that I played hockey, the coaches, a couple times I had to cancel games, Pipe Man, to go to gigs and stuff like that. So they dubbed me Rockstar. They're like, "Oh, Rockstar's here today. He's gonna
nice.
He's gonna grace us with his presence." But I was only playing in little top 40 bands doing cover songs. I definitely was not a rock star at that stage. But I had the long hair flowing out the back of the helmet and everything. So
yeah, there you go.
You know,
rock star is a state of mind anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't go around saying I'm a rock star, but a lot of people say to me, "Andy, boy, you've been a pretty lucky guy. You've had a real long ride with Coney Hatch and my other bands." So I consider myself pretty lucky to have been able to tour and make records and make a living out of it, you know?
There you go. And, you know, I got to tell you, Well, one last hockey story that you'll appreciate because you're from Canada. So I was really, really involved in the hockey and stuff during the Jacques Lemaire days. And
oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
I remember, and see, one thing in New Jersey is, in New Jersey, you had Devils fans, you had Flyers fans, you had Islanders fans, and you had Rangers fans. So it kind of sucked in a way because no matter where you went in your home state, people would give you crap for wearing Devils stuff. Okay? You know, and then especially the Flyers people, because they just want to, like, kick your ass and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And
well, and you're right. The Flyers fans are a whole different breed. Like, they're pretty hardcore. And I went to see the Blackhawks play there a couple times and got verbally abused.
Oh, yeah. They come into your own house.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, they come into your own house and start fights with you. But here's the greatest part. So I went up to Montreal, and
okay.
I was in a restaurant bar, and I was wearing a Devil's ski jacket. And okay. I felt like I was more at home than in Jersey, because, like, everybody was, like, all around me because I was wearing Devils. Like, they were, like, they loved me because I was into the Devils. And I'm like, man, at home, I don't get that. At home, I get the shit kicked out of me for wearing a Devil's jacket. But,
and
you know.
And you think it's the Jacques Lemaire Association?
It definitely was, because what happened was is I said something to them, and they're like, well, it's because of Jacques Lemaire, because, like, we just love Jacques Lemaire hockey, you know? And so that's what it came down to, you know? But, you were speaking of goalies. I was there at the Stanley Cup where Brodeur scored the goal.
Oh, my God. That was such an awesome moment. Like, how often do you get to see a goaltender take a shot from the other end of the ice and score? And Brodeur, one of the finest all-time goalies. And, yes, I am a diehard Blackhawk fan, but when you talk about guys like Lemaire and Brodeur, like, you can't help but not love those guys regardless of what team they're on.
Yeah, no doubt. And what was even better is when I was at that same Stanley Cup game, Wayne Gretzky was there, but he was 9 rows above me.
I got to see the great one play a few times because living in Toronto, not only did my band, my various bands play a lot in Buffalo, New York, but, you know, it's very tough to get a hockey ticket in Toronto. Every single game is sold out. So oftentimes my brothers and my friends, we drive to Buffalo to see those games. And I got to see the great one play in Buffalo when he was on the Edmonton Oilers.
Nice.
That was a treat.
Yeah, that must have been for sure. So let's talk about today and what we're doing now, because you have a lot of exciting stuff going on during a time where everybody's been, you know, locked down. You've been pretty busy.
Well, I think leading into that question, you know, because of COVID, a lot of musicians and not even musicians, there's a lot of downtime at home in between the work and everything and Zoom calls and family life. And I started looking, I'm lucky enough to have a pretty Spartan home studio, but, you know, I started looking around at all of these tapes that I had gathered over the years. And my wife was, you know, encouraging me to purge and get rid of stuff that I wasn't using or hadn't opened in ages. Right. And to be honest with you, Pipe Man, that was the whole thing that started it. Not only did the COVID environment spawn the Coney Hatch show at the Alma Combo, but it spawned me to go into my tape collection and pull out stuff and go, oh my God, I can't believe I haven't done anything with that. I've been sitting on the master tapes for my Caramel record, which was signed to Geffen for a good 15 to 20 years, and same with the Leisure World record. So I spoke to a very good friend of mine who works with a company out of Nashville called Symphonic Distribution, and they represent a lot of indie artists and signed artists. But what they do is they help you get your music up on Apple and Amazon and Spotify. And so I spoke to him and said, man, I've got these two records that I should have put out a long time ago. And to give you some background on that, Pipe Man, those records, they obviously came out, you know, in the late 1990s and early 2000s, but they were out and digital was not really a platform at that point. So there was physical copies and they came out in CDs and some on vinyl, but after that, they were just a long lost secret. So the encouragement of my wife and my brothers and some of my friends going, dude, I can't get your music on Spotify. I'm in my car. I want to listen to that. So I just got busy and cleaned the crap out of my studio and wanted to get them out. And I'm really proud of both of those records. And it was a nice form of like mini closure for me. Okay, great. Now the world can hear those records because they were a bit of a best kept secret, you know?
Yeah, that's totally cool. And, you know, that's the one thing I've been saying for about COVID is it's almost like it was a forced, you know, reset for people. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, we've been going a million miles a minute, like every day. And it's like you don't even have time to even I've said that some of the best music's going to come out of this time because you don't even have time nowadays as a musician to write music properly because you're just you got 10 million things to do and it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So,
yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, man. It was a very good reset. It was a reset for people to, you know, reconnect with their family and their kids and their wives and their husbands. But it was also, like you said, everybody was honestly, man, like, because half of my, I don't know what, how much you know about me, but, you know, I had a successful transition from a full-time musician into working with the guys in Rush at their label as part of their management team and part of their record company. And like you said, Pipe Man, like you're on the phone 24/7, you're meeting, you're driving, you're going out to dinners, you're doing this and that. And if I took one more call when somebody said to me, oh, dude, I'm so busy, I can't talk to you. It was just like, oh, whatever. Like everybody's busy. But it was the great evening, even the playing field, wasn't it? The whole COVID thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it just I think it boosts creativity because you finally get to like get off the hamster wheel and even though not even of your choice, but then like the golden stuff like you're talking about happens, you dig up stuff that, you know, maybe we would have never heard for ever if there wasn't a COVID.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, despite the fact that I wear many different hats, you know, at the core of the guy that you're talking to is a musician. And when in for years I was creating and touring and writing and producing and doing all that kind of stuff. So when COVID hit, it was nice to reconnect with everything again because I actually had the time to do it. Life slowed down, and you're right, it forced me to go back and take a look at cleaning up my studio and going, okay, what do I want to get busy with? And you know, just quickly segueing over into Coney Hatch. Some of the friendships that I made recently is the new owner of the legendary Alma Combo in Toronto. And for anybody that doesn't know about the Alma Combo, it's I would say arguably the most prestigious and well-known sort of showcase small venue out of Toronto, if not in Canada, right? Similar to maybe the Cavern Club where the Beatles played, or the Roxy, or maybe CBGBs in New York, you know, the instant recognition. Oh my God, CBGBs, are you kidding me, right?
Yeah.
So long story short, with the Alma Combo, my kid brother John, one of his friends is Michael Weckerly, and Mike is a Bay Street entrepreneur here in Canada, but he was also on the television show that's similar to your Shark Tank, you know? And so he basically bought the Alma Combo. He totally renovated it. They put a recording studio in there, amazing lighting and broadcast quality lighting and 4K cameras. And he came to me during COVID and he said, we're not allowed to have a full venue, but we can have, you know, about 50 people in there. What do you think about Coney Hatch coming back and doing a live stream show? I saw you guys play there in 1983. And we had never, the course of the band, when we started in 1982, we've done four studio records. But a lot of times people said that Coney Hatch was at their best when they played live because it was just in your face, two guitars, bass, drums, vocals, and what you see is what you get. And we pack a wall up live, and everybody said, man, I wish you guys would do a live record. So 30 years later, we do a live record. We come out of the live stream with Nugs.net, where we did a live stream, a one and done, and we got the audio and the video, and we remixed it. And so that live at the Alma Combo record was sort of 30 years in the planning of wanting to do a live record, Pipe Man.
Wow. I love that story because, you know, it's even better than, you know, people wouldn't realize you'd come up with a live record now and they probably think, oh, you took some live show that you did a while ago. But this is something that was specifically done for this album and is current and is today. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah. And thanks for saying that. And the other little side story that I'll tell you about is, you know, we were toying around with the idea, and Coney had, there was a resurgence in interest on Coney Hatch, mostly in Europe. And we had got a lot of offers to play in Belgium and France and the UK because Kerrang! Magazine really took a shining to us in the early 80s. But we didn't play there a lot, Pipe Man. So when we finally got over, we recorded a show in Germany and we just said, ah, man, this will be fun one day. We should mix this thing. But the Elma Combo, because it was basically a one-stop shopping, once we walked out of there, they handed us a hard drive with beautifully recorded music, and we had a full show there. So we started going, okay, we don't really have a record label. What are we going to do with this? And I'm dating myself and telling you that you know, my history with the Elma Combo goes further back than just playing there. I was lucky enough to see the Cars play Wow. their very first show in Canada when they played, they came in off their first solo record. And I got to see Rory Gallagher and Edgar Winter and a few other notable bands play there. But, you know, anybody that knows the Elma Combo knows the Rolling Stones played there, U2, Stevie Ray Vaughan, the list goes on and on. So I ended up finding a bootleg copy of the Cars live. And it was a very, very bootleggy, just like plain white cover with a rubber stamp on it. And it had an insert that had the set list and said what the date was. And we thought, what a cool concept. So our original idea was just to make 100 copies of Live at the Elma Combo, put them up on coneyhatch.com, sign them, number them, offer them to the fans. And so we did that, and our merch guy put his hand up and said, man, 100 isn't enough. We should do at least 300. And I know some guys at record stores that would want this. And so fast forward to this day, it looks like we might be sold out very quickly of these 300 copies. They went really, really quick off the website. And there's going to be a few copies that are available in record stores, but the best place to get it is at coneyhatch.com. And we did some CD versions of it, but kind of be careful what you wish for, because we didn't think that we didn't know that the demand for it was going to be anything significant. And now we've got some labels hovering going, hey, maybe we might want to help you with this. So it's been a really fun ride, Pipe Man, to just watch the excitement around the record.
And you know what? Doesn't that make you sit and think sometimes when that happens, like, what was I thinking? Why didn't I think of doing this years ago?
It certainly does. It falls under the procrastination department. But, you know, I do think when you're in a band and you don't realize the impact that you've made, and I can only draw a comparison to myself, and they say the music that you grew up on is the music that you take with you forever. And I think of growing up as a teenager, and I had posters on the walls of my bedroom of all the bands that I love, like Cheap Trick and Aerosmith and UFO and Ted Nugent and, you know, Blue Oyster Cult and all of these, Tommy Bolin and these great bands, right? And they're a backdrop for my youth. I grew up and loving those bands and still do. And I listen to them and I still buy every Cheap Trick record that comes out because I love the band. And it's funny when people tell you that about Coney Hatch. I've had people, when we played in Europe, Pipe Man, we had grown men in their 50s and 60s at the table with tears in their eyes going, we've waited 30 years for Coney Hatch to play in the UK. And then you realize, wow, I guess our music did have an impact. But it's hard to see that when you're in the band. You don't really realize it, you know?
Well, you know what? It's funny you should say that because it says a lot about you. Because as a press person, I have there's this rating system that I have of interviews. There's three types of artists. There's the up and comer that they're like nice as can be because they just want every promo they can get, and you know they're just hungry. So they're really cool interviews. And then you have the icons who are, you know, people like yourself and people like you mentioned that they really don't even have a clue that they're icons. It's like they're just regular people, and the interviews are always so much fun because they have no ego. It's like they don't even realize where they are, and that's where I'm putting you, because that's basically what it comes down to. It's like, you know, you just do it for the love of a music. You're a musician, and that's all you really care about. And then there's that middle road, the middle one. The middle ones are the ones that maybe got a little bit of fame for a millisecond, or had it, or never made it but thought they did. And they're the ones always with the attitude. And it's funny. Yeah. What I say is those are the ones that got in it to become rock stars, whereas people like you got in it because of your love of music and being a musician, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, honestly, thank you for saying that. And that is the truth, because you strip everything away. You strip the gold records and the amazing tours that we're on and all the great people that we played with and met, and you strip it all away. And really at the core of it is a huge music fan. And you could have said to me, Pipeman, hey, do you want to get on and do a half hour interview to talk about all the bands that you grew up with and influenced you and loved, and all of the great musicians that you shared the stage with? And I could go on and talk to you for an hour about that and just pinch me moments to go, wait a second, how did I meet Edgar Winter? He was the first guy that I saw on the Frankenstein tour and the Shock Treatment. How did I meet him and end up sharing a stage with him and getting him to sign my sheet music of Frankenstein? It's just like, how did I get here, right? Just that's one example of it, right? Or I mentioned Cheap Trick, you know, to be lucky enough to open for them. And many years later, to strike up a friendship with Robin Zander, one of my all-time favorite lead singers, and go, this is crazy. I just got an email from Robin Zander. He's actually my friend. I got to pinch myself on that, right? So I always tell people, Pipe Man, I'm extremely lucky. I've been hit by lightning multiple times to give me chances to make records and tour. And I just feel extremely lucky because not everybody gets to do what they want to do and make a living out of it, you know?
Absolutely. No doubt about it. And, you know, it's funny, you've mentioned Cheap Trick a couple times, so that's one of my moments, too, is I was interviewing Rick Nielsen at a show, and they had a new song coming out. It wasn't out anywhere, and he just, in the middle of the interview, pulls out his guitar and starts, he says, you want to hear the new song? Nobody's ever heard it before, and starts playing it during the interview. I'm like, wow. That was like one of those moments, like, all right, I need to control myself because I can't fanboy out here. But, man, this is like an amazing, iconic moment.
That does sound really special. And you're right about your analogy of different sort of dynamics of when you meet a musician who's got a chip on their shoulder and they actually – I think there's something in there where they buy into all the press and the notoriety. And if they start believing the bullshit, if enough people come up to you and say, dude, you're freaking awesome. I love your band. You're amazing. I love your bass playing. I love your singing. If you're not grounded, you can easily get an inflated ego and start walking around with your chest puffed out. And I've met a lot of those folks, and I'm not a fan of that. I think you gotta always remember your humble beginnings, and none of us would be in the position to be making music if people didn't come to the shows and buy it. So you gotta be humble. And I've seen a lot of assholes and met a lot of assholes that you're talking about, and I'll leave names out, but it's always surprises me because most of them are like one hit wonders, as you said.
Exactly. And you know what? The fact of the matter is that, you know, they're still, a lot of them are still, like you said, one hit wonders. They're still trying to hold on to something, still live in a time that doesn't exist. You know, I've actually seen a scenario with somebody like that where they literally said to somebody, do you want my autograph? And they're like, who are you?
I love it. And I have to tell you like another pinch me moment, because the person that put us together is our mutual friend, Chip Ruggieri. And Chip's such a great PR guy, and when I told him about all these various projects I had going on, he said, "Oh man, I want to help you." And he lined up this interview today. But a couple weeks ago, he said to me, "Hey Andy, I've got a Bass Player magazine interview with you." And I said, "Wait a second here." I just stopped in my tracks. I said, "I've been in a band for over 30 years. I'm an avid, you know, bass player, bass guitar collector, and I have never done an interview with any magazine related to my bass playing." I said, "I am so excited about this." And it was quite a thrill for me to be even mentioned and featured in these magazines. Again, going back to being a music fan, you know, to be in a magazine that is doing a feature on Geddy Lee or Chris Squire or Stanley Clark or Jaco Pastorius or Doug Pinnick from King's X. These guys are my bass heroes. And I'm like, wait a sec, I'm in the same issue as an issue that's featuring Doug Pinnick from King's X. It's just like, I really wasn't expecting that. And what a thrill for me to do that and be featured in that magazine.
Wow, that is amazing. That is pretty cool too. And, you know, to bring one other thing into the interview, tell us about how Alex Lifeson is connected to your new music.
Oh my God. Okay. That's an awesome question. And I'm sort of a bit of a private guy. Like I think you can tell, Pipe Man, like I'm not the type of guy that's just going to start bragging about all kinds of shit that I'm doing right now. But again, a real pinch me moment on it was when I worked with Geddy, Alex and Neil for 15 years, I was part of the management company and the record company. So my title there was at the A&R man. And anybody that doesn't know what A&R is, it stands for artist and repertoire. And you help the artist from beginning to end fulfill the dream of making a record. You do everything from booking the studio time to helping get the engineers and the mixing, the artwork, the videos, like everything that is involved in making those records, you're involved in that. And it's a process that I love and I did many times with my own band. So to be part of the rush, you know, making of a record is like, first and foremost, I'll tell you, you don't A&R rush. Those boys, they know what they want. They tell you what they want and they make their records. So it was very much an administrative role with those guys and part of the team. But I got to be very good friends with those guys. One of my solo bands, when I put out my solo record that I was lucky enough to win a couple of Juno Awards on, or a Juno Award nomination and win one, we were the opening act for a bunch of shows on the Roll the Bones tour. So I got to be friends with Geddy, Alex and Neil way before I started working with them. And Alex... And my relationship with Alex and Ged and Neil was never anything to do with collaborating. It was, I'm part of your label. I'm part of your management team. I'll help you with your endorsements with Fender and Gibson. We did some great things with Rockman and Guitar Hero, but never did they ever come to me, Pipe Man, and go, "Hey, dude, do you want to write a song together?" They knew I was a musician, but right. And I never crossed that line. I never called those guys up and go, "Hey, you want to start a side band or something?" Right? So it just wasn't in the cards, and it wouldn't have been appropriate. So fast forward to last year, I got together with Alex, and we were actually talking about some projects to do with Gibson guitars, because he's still very much involved with them. And he said to me, "Hey, enough of business, dude. What are you doing? I know you still play. I know you still record. I think you do some shows with Tony Hatch. What else are you doing?" And I said, "Well, ironically, I'd started writing with a very talented singer-songwriter and a friend of mine in Toronto, Al Fanabellini. We're writing with this young woman named Maya Wynn, and she's got an incredible voice. I think she's a diamond in the rough. I really think she has what it takes, and I'm working on songs with her." And he said, "Oh man, I'd love to hear that. So send me a few things." So I sent him a couple MP3s, and we only had two or three songs at that point. And he called me back and he said, "Wow, man, I think it'd be really cool if I play in some of this stuff." And I was hoping he was going to say that. And that was a pinch me moment to have Alex Lifeson say, "I would like to be involved with one of your projects on a creative end." So we started working on two songs. We're up to seven now. One of our songs, called Liar, already was placed in a Netflix series called Tiny Pretty Things. And we're starting to see a little bit of interest based on interviews like this, where people are now calling going, hey, what's going on? Do you guys have a label? Do you have a publishing company? So the project is called Envy of None, and it very much features Maya Wynn. I don't have anything that I can tell you or your listeners to go listen to it at this point, but I'm going to tell you very soon you will hear a lot more about this project.
Oh, very, very exciting stuff. Man, just like I said in the beginning of the interview, you've been pretty busy, you know.
I have, and the one thing that COVID has stopped me dead in my tracks on at the moment because of all of the Ontario restrictions is playing ice hockey. So I'd like to be a little bit busier on the ice and continue to play, because I'm still waiting for the Blackhawks scouts to come in and go, Kern, we need a speedy right winger with a high rising slap shot. Are you available? And I would say, yeah, but no, all joking aside, I have been pretty busy, Pipe Man, and it's been nice. It's filled the time during the COVID chapter that we're all going through.
Nice. And, you know, one last hockey thing from me that you'll probably love is I also used to take my son to go skate on the ice with the Devils, and I've actually taken a shot. I've taken a shot on Brodeur. Of course, I can't get it by Brodeur, but I took a shot on him.
You know, that had to be a thrill, because, you know, we all have different heroes, and some of them are musicians and some of them are actors and sport athletes and everything. But to get on the ice with those guys, that must have been a thrill, Pipe Man.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. Getting checked by Scott Niedermeyer, you know, stuff like that.
I'll tap out of that one. Some of those guys, what your big crushing guy was Scott. Was it Scott Stevens? Wasn't it? He was the guy that you
yeah,
had to be
and then
really
there was
of, right?
Yeah, Scott Stevens, but Scott Stevens wasn't the enforcer. He was just all around great, but he was a big dude. I can't believe I'm drawing a blank right now. I can see his face. Our enforcer at the time, he was brutal. Brutal. I'm trying. I can see his face and everything. I can't even remember his name. I can't believe it. I'm drawing a blank right now. But, yeah, that was when we used to play the typical Jacques Lemaire trap. So it was our defense. It was Scott Stevens. And the guy I'm talking about was the other side of Scott Stevens. I can't believe I'm drawing a blank. I just remember so many times.
Like a Polish or European name or something. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think. And he was a big dude, and like he used to knock people out. Danico. That's who it was. Danico.
Oh, Danico. That's right. Oh, he was a big boy. He was a crusher too. And
oh yeah.
That I have some fond memories of that rink where the Devils play in. You know, I'll name drop a little bit here, but when Coney Hatch had the big tours and we were playing with Judas Priest and Iron Maiden, and we struck up friendships with those bands. So my friendship with Steve was playing a lot of tennis with him on our days off with Coney Hatch. So that carried on many years after we finished touring with Iron Maiden. And
nice.
I remember Steve inviting me. He said, hey, why don't you come to New York City? We'll play some tennis. We've got a show at Madison Square. And then we've also got a show at Meadowlands. And if I recall, Tesla was the opening act at Meadowlands that when I saw Iron Maiden that night. But we had a day off where David Lee Roth played at Meadowlands, and Billy Sheehan from Talas was in the band, and Steve Vai. And
wow.
I'm friends with Billy because he grew up in Buffalo. So we got to go to see the show at Meadowlands, and I got some great memories of that rink. That was an awesome night seeing David Lee Roth play there.
Nice. Yeah, that was a home for me like almost every night. So let's tell everybody how they can connect you on the web, social media, how they can get the new live album, which is absolutely amazing. Everybody's got to check it out. Live from the El Macambo. And I am so sad I never got to see a show there, because I have been to the Roxy and CBGB's and all the Iconics here.
Yeah.
And I was never at that one.
Well, before I do the blatant plug of everything that you so nicely teed up for me on all the music, I will tell you that if you get a chance, and if your listeners get a chance, go to theelmacombo.com, because there's a beautiful website that not only shows you the historically what the venue used to look like and all the great bands that played there, but what it looks like now. So, and it's such a great venue and a landmark in Toronto. So if you're interested in finding the Coney Hatch record and purchasing it and in learning more about it, you go to coneyhatch.com. My stuff that I mentioned to you, my solo records, Leisure World, and also Caramel, that was originally signed to Geffen, those are up on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, all of your favorite DSPs. You can go to andycurranmusic.com to learn a little bit more about my world. And between those two websites and those URLs, I'm on, my daughter helps me with my Twitter and my Instagram. So you can find me, Andy Curran Official, on both of those social media platforms. I'm not really a Facebook guy, but she's helping me with on that, because there's just not, like you said, there's not enough time in the day, Pipe Man, for all of this stuff. But there you go. There's the blatant plug. That's where you find all the music.
Love it. There you go. And, you know, it's been amazing talking to you. You're definitely an icon. I recommend all our listeners check out all of your stuff, because if they haven't heard it, they're definitely missing out, and they have a chance now. And thank you for putting out this new music, and thank you for being on The Adventures in Pipe Man.
You're very welcome, and absolute pleasure to meet you and be on the show, and appreciate all the kind words, buddy, and best of luck during COVID to you and the family. And let's hope the Devils and the Blackhawks have a better outing next year. And anytime you want to drag me on the show down the road for hockey and rock and roll, buddy, I'm here for you.
Hey, sounds good. And anytime you need anything, you just give a shout and we'll get back together again for sure.
Hey, this is Andy Curran from Coney Hatch and a million other bands, and you're listening to The Pipe Man on W4CY Radio.
Thank you for listening to The Adventures of Pipe Man on W4CY Radio.